you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, you're listening to Sci-Fi Wire's Days of Marvel podcast. On today's episode, it's day 8 of our 8 Days of Spider-Man countdown, and we're talking about Spider-Man Far From Home. Stay tuned. Hey everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's host, Caitlin Bush, the Associate Features Editor here at Sci-Fi Wire. On this podcast, we're counting down to the release of Spider-Man Far From Home by revisiting all of the Spider-Man movies, including all the Spider-Man appearances in the MCU, one day at a time. Each day, we tackle a different movie, re-explore the plot, call out our favorite moments, and discuss its place in the ever-expanding Spider-Verse. So, let's swing right in. Oh, that's so good.
We haven't used that one, right? That's the first time that's been used on this podcast.
Definitely. It was very original. That's all me. Today, I'm joined by my Sci-Fi Wire co-hosts. Gentlemen, if you'd like to introduce yourselves.
Okay. My name's Adam Swiderski, and I am the editor-in-chief of Sci-Fi Wire.
And I'm Jordan Zachrin. I'm the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire.
They are my bosses.
But today, the tables have turned.
Now, I'm the boss. That's now, right. I'm the Spider-Man.
She can fire us just this, during this 1 hour.
Right here. So, we're going to get into Spider-Man Far From Home. So, we start with Nick Fury and Maria Hill arriving in a small town in Mexico that's been ripped apart due to a crazy storm. It turns out it's a huge monster that we'll later learn is called an Earth Elemental. A mysterious, handsome man who we'll learn is named Quentin Beck shows up and fights the Elemental and saves Fury and Maria, much to their amazement.
When did they decide to bring back Cobie Smulders? I know, like, she, you know, had that moment in Infinity War, but it's really, I'm glad. I like her, but mm-hmm. She was gone for a while.
Was she? She's always just popped up here and there.
Yeah.
But this is like a bigger...
Whenever Fury needs her, she just like pops in.
Yeah.
This is a bigger role for her than she's had in a while.
She was in Endgame, wasn't she?
She was in the funeral scene.
Yeah. There you go.
That's it. So after that, in a fantastic tonal shift, we moved over to the Midtown School of Science and Technology's student-run and student-edited news show, which is playing a tribute to the MCU's fallen heroes, especially Tony Stark, including stock images, stock footage, all of that good stuff.
Nice throwback to the Peter Parker shot intro to Far From, the other one, Homecoming.
Homecoming.
Yes.
I feel like this is a Snapchat show they also put on the closed system TV there, because it's a very Snapchatty type deal.
It's so good. It's darling. So they explain in this newscast that while the kids who didn't disappear in the snap continued aging up, the kids who did disappear stayed the same age.
And this is, I think, I actually really love this because, you know, in Endgame and Infinity War, it's, you know, we call it the snapshot, and it's this big moving event. And then you think about how would teenagers process this? They would memeify it, probably. They would,
absolutely, you
know, come up with a stupid name, hashtag for it, whatever. Like,
it'd be great.
So, you know, we want to take it all seriously, but that's not what the kids do.
And right. The schools are got to be just real burdened with the, sure, the kids.
Right. Well, having to figure all of this out. Well, they do explain, luckily for our purposes, Peter, Ned, MJ, and Flash, who we all know and love and hate, were all some of the kids who were snapped and didn't continue aging.
Yeah, it really worked out well.
Right. So now that they're all attending school with kids who used to be 5 years younger than them, and now they're their age, so there's some weirdness going on there.
Yeah, Brandon.
Brad.
Brad, whatever.
We were calling him Brandon. His name is actually Brad. Both names are bad. But and the kids who are now in their grade had to do the last year of school over again to help the reappeared kids feel more comfortable and readjust, which sucks.
That's so weird.
How do you convince parents that, oh yeah, like, just to help other kids feel more comfortable?
Also, wouldn't they know all the answers to the tests?
Right. Teachers had to come up with a whole new curriculum.
I think they should have just let everyone graduate. Like, even if, like, you were snapped and you're
even
like 16
again. Even if, like, you
again,
were a freshman when you snapped, all of a sudden.
Like, just, like, go to a separate school. Like, have like, a separate supplemental school, maybe.
That's not a bad idea. But
these are the big questions.
These are the big questions. Now that
they're not really sure how they got everyone to agree to that, but that solves one of the biggest lingering questions from Endgame, which was, you know, how are we going to deal with all of this? Turns out Endgame happened 8 months ago, and we're off to the races.
One more question about this. Do you think every school did this, or do you think it was just this New York City school system?
I got the impression it was every school. But
yeah, that's a big national endeavor.
International. We learned that Peter and a group of students, a lot of them being kids who were snapped, are taking a trip to Europe for 2 weeks. This group includes Peter and Ned and MJ, as well as Flash and a new villain, the worst person in the MCU, Brad Davis.
I'm just calling him Brandon. You know what it is? I knew a Brandon who I didn't like, and I think I just grabbed
that
on him.
You just really, yeah. Well, more on Brad later.
Brandon.
More on Brad. Hey!
More on Brad.
He did it. He did it. Got him.
So I love that they're going on a science trip, but there's no real science happening.
I'm really sad that they didn't use the song Holiday Road for the traveling to Europe scenes from National Lampoon's European Vacation. That was a really missed opportunity to appeal to the older audience.
That's really good.
Like myself.
Look at that Chevy Chase make a cameo. Everyone loves him.
Yeah, exactly.
So while we're preparing for this 2 week trip, Peter informs his buddy Ned of his plan to woo MJ, which is a multi-step thing.
You really thought this out.
Yeah.
More than I thought at like my engagement.
But he's a nerd. He's a science nerd. I mean, yeah. It's a very scientific approach.
So the steps are, he's going to, one, sit next to her on the plane and share headphones with her so that they can watch a movie together. Two, buy her a black Dahlia necklace in Venice because she likes the murder, because she's a perfect creature. And three, he's going to give her the necklace while they're at the top of the Eiffel Tower and confess his feelings to her. Ned, being Ned, is irritated that Peter doesn't want to be a bachelor in Europe.
This is the subplot with Ned is one of my favorite parts of this whole movie.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's very, very charming.
So later, Aunt May and Spider-Man are giving away a bunch of money to a homeless shelter, and Happy Hogan, who we all know and love, shows up to tell Peter that Nick Fury is going to call him. And then Fury does call him in that moment right then and there, and Peter, being the sweet, dumb child that he is, hangs up on Fury, much to Happy's horror. And in the middle of all of this, May and Happy are making eyes at each other, and Peter's like looking at Happy going, what's happening?
I love Marissa Tomei.
Yeah,
she's so good in this.
It's just, because I think when they announced that for Homecoming, everybody's just like, oh, but Aunt May is supposed to be
she's
old.
So
it's
young.
Such a departure. What this movie does, what this series has done so far, I think is put a good modern spin on a lot of classic Spider-Man tropes. Mm-hmm. But still keeping very true to the feeling of it. And May is one of those things.
And they have such a good, fun, positive relationship, too.
Yeah.
It's really fun to see.
Yeah, she's not sitting there going, oh, don't be Spider-Man, you're in danger, you know,
right.
Nine times out of ten you would get that.
The first movie, Homecoming, they're watching, they're like a pizza place, and she's like, if you ever see a bad guy like that, run. But then once she finds out it's him, she's like, all right, yeah, go do your thing.
Go kick his ass.
Go ahead. Be a hero.
I wonder like how much Happy and May hung out during the 5 years. I don't think Happy got snapped, so did they like comfort each other? Was it like a
I don't remember.
Thing?
Did Happy get snapped?
I feel like he was part of the whole.
They
like,
probably addressed that in Endgame and I forgot because it was a minor plot detail.
Peter, after kind of giving Happy the side eye, goes back to the crowd for a small press conference that he becomes overwhelmed by as everyone asks him, oh, you're going to be the next Iron Man, blah, blah, blah. Not realizing that he is a like 16-year-old child and no, he should not be the next Iron Man.
Which again is an interesting reversal because Spider-Man Homecoming, he's all like, I'm ready. I want to be an Avenger.
Right.
And now he's seen what that means and he wants to be a kid.
He's grown up a little bit and he wants to stay
But
back.
By growing up,
he's
he wants to
back.
Stay young.
I love it.
Whoa.
Like all of us.
I love it. Look at it. So Peter has a small panic attack and has to leave and deal with his own problems. Part of dealing with his own problems is him deciding that he doesn't want to take his Spider-Man suit with him to Europe. But once he gets to the airport, he finds out that Aunt May snuck it into a suitcase with a thoughtful little note. Attached to
nice
it.
Nice little Easter egg moment there for
Very
those
nice.
Looking at the monogram on the suitcase.
Very
EFP.
Good.
I was wanting, they didn't really mention Ben at all in the first movie.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's implied that he has some trauma, you know, left over from it. And obviously May is struggling a little bit with it, but.
Because that very easily falls into the trap, the Batman trap, right?
Exactly.
If we need to see his
the
parents
pearls
die every
again
single
and
time,
again.
You know, and it's like, nope, this is established.
Right.
And, you know, in the first one, he's so pumped to be Spider-Man. It's not a guilt thing.
Right.
And now it becomes like, it's almost like Tony Stark is his new Uncle Ben.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So while they're on the plane to Europe, Peter doesn't get sit next to MJ. She sits next to Brad. And when they deplane in Venice, it turns out that Ned has started up a romantic relationship with Betty Brant. Who's the little blonde girl we only saw previously as the co-host of the student newscast. And now they're like this incredibly dedicated couple over the course of their like 8-hour flight.
Yeah.
And like, now they're in love.
And like she fell for him playing computer games too. It wasn't like he was trying to impress her, right, which I really like.
He was just being himself.
Yeah, they have much a lot in common.
That's wonderful.
I have come up with the name for the Brad Caitlin ship, by the way.
Oh God.
It is Bradlin.
Bradlin. All right.
Brandon.
Or Bratlin.
Bratlin. Oh God.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm encouraging this either, because he's the worst person.
No, this is happening.
He's also the worst person. Jacked. He's supposed to be like 16 or whatever, but he looks like he's like 23.
Right.
He's so big
like,
and
he's
jacked.
A very large person.
Like me.
I mean, a lot of the time.
No one in this movie is a teenager.
No, absolutely not.
But I will say, like, you know, Tom Holland and Zendaya and Ned can like present as teenagers.
Right. They look younger
than
they are.
Yeah, exactly.
While Peter is mooning over MJ in Venice and they're taking some walking tours, blah, 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 a water elemental shows up, which conveniently is in Venice, you know, with all of the canals and everything. And along with the water elemental comes Quentin Beck. So Peter gets caught up in the battle and helps out, all the while trying to hide his identity and save his classmates.
So the first thing that I found interesting here is that this is probably, I would say, maybe about half an hour into the film.
Yeah.
And this is the first time
there's been a lot of setup.
We're seeing Spider, like him do Spider-Man things. They're leaning into the human drama. They're leaning into the high school-y type of character stuff. I don't like. I gotta be honest. I was a little like ready for. I was like, okay, let's do some action.
Okay,
all
right.
You know,
I think that's probably the issue a lot of people will have is that it does focus a lot more on his relationships with other people, with himself. You know,
which pays
blah, blah,
off.
Blah.
I think, and not to spoilers, but you know, it's just at the beginning. I was. It is. It's like a half hour before he's not even wearing the suit in this action sequence.
Right.
You know? So.
I didn't think about that. That's a good point, though.
Yeah.
I like that he's still not that good at being Spider-Man.
No, it's
you know,
great.
Like, you know, even during this sequence, like,
he's still a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's gotten better than what we saw.
Sure.
You know, he's fought in space and all of that stuff.
It's like when you bring up a prospect from the minor leagues and like they're going to struggle a little bit in the majors, but you think they'll make it eventually.
Well, and it's such a contrast to the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man who got a short montage and then was expert Spider-Man.
Right.
Yeah.
He's actually learning.
He's still incredibly dorky, but just good at doing the acrobatics.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of destruction in Venice, but everything comes out okay in the end. Peter has to wear like a Mardi Gras style mask to hide himself. It's all very good. But that night, Peter is visited in his hotel room by none other than Nick Fury, who's not very happy about being ghosted by a teenager.
I love this scene.
Yeah.
I love this scene so much because he keeps getting interrupted by normal
by teachers
high school stuff. Yeah.
And
the way the music cuts back and forth.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so funny.
And just the idea of Fury, who is the most impatient, irritated person of all time, having to deal with a teenager's bullshit all the time is just absolutely amazing.
I just love that he knows and uses the term ghosted.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Well, you know, Nick Fury's with it, man.
Sure.
He's online.
This is the most fun we've had with Nick Fury, I think, up to
absolutely.
This point.
They very much...
He's from Captain Marvel.
Yeah, but this is... I mean,
he's taunted here, which is
right,
fun. Yeah.
Right. I think they more and more over time are leaning more into the fact that Nick Fury is played by Samuel L. Jackson, who is a fun, wonderful comedic presence.
Yeah.
Despite all of these issues, Fury delivers a small package to Peter. More on that in a bit. And he also kind of kidnaps Peter and formally introduces him to Quentin Beck, who claims to be from another reality that was destroyed by the elementals that are now attacking our Earth, which he refers to as Earth 616, to be precise for anyone who caught that, in the exact same pattern that they attacked his own world. Quentin wants to help stop another world from being destroyed and has provided Fury, Maria, and their team with all the necessary coordinates and information, which is very convenient that he just has all of this memorized and knows all of it and is able to pass it off.
I also like that this comes, you know, however many months after Into the Spider-Verse, you know, with that kind of stuff.
Right.
Where, you know,
the multiverse and all of that.
Yeah, the viewing public is first introduced to that kind of stuff.
So Peter listens to all of this. He's impressed, but he does bow out, saying he wants to be a teenager. He wants to enjoy his vacation. And Fury pretends to accept him bowing out. Except then Fury commandeers Peter's trip and redirects them all to Prague, where the Fire Elemental is set to attack next.
I love Martin Starr being like, we got upgraded. He thinks he's so tough.
Martin Starr is in this movie a lot.
He is so, I mean, he was great in Homecoming.
Sure, but he was just kind of there in Homecoming, like as a one or two scene guy. Here he is a major supporting player in this film.
And he's great.
What do we think about the addition of J.B. Smoove?
Fantastic.
I was wondering if maybe they couldn't get Hannibal Buress back.
I know. I loved Hannibal in that.
I wondered about that.
In the first movie, he was like, hey, you can't lead detention. Don't do anything about it. Like, he's great. But J.B. Smoove is a nice, you know, replacement.
Yeah, no, he was funny. He was funny. I was like, oh, man.
His paranoia was beautiful.
Yeah.
So the group is on the way to Prague in the bus, and Peter undoes this package that Fury has given him. It's a gift left to Peter by Tony. And in the package are some very Tony Stark-style sunglasses that we learn have an AI named Edith built into them. Edith stands for Even Dead, I'm the Hero, because of course it does. And this AI is incredibly intelligent, can hack into just about anything, and has control over this massive defense system in space that includes seemingly thousands of drones that are now at Peter's beck and call.
I wonder how many items he created filled with arrogant names in case of his death. Like, does he have a whole closet or lab filled with, like, arrogant, pretentious names for things?
So we're on this bus. Peter's kind of playing around with this AI, trying to figure it out. I think he's kind of treating it in the same way that he did Karen when he first discovered her in Homecoming. He's, like, trying to make friends with her and chatting.
All his AI has the most mom names.
I love
Edith and Karen.
So much. I love it. But so Peter, through all of this, before he actually took out the glasses, they take out the glasses, I think they stop at a rest stop, and an agent who's working for Fury delivers a new suit to Peter and insists that he puts it on. It's very awkward. She, not really caring, insists that he take his clothes off so he can try it on right then and there.
Yeah.
And he starts taking it off, and Brad walks in the door, sees Peter with his pants off next to this very beautiful, tall, European-looking woman, and assumes that she's a prostitute and that Peter is going to sleep with her. He's like, I don't judge, man, and then takes a photo so that he can then blackmail Peter with it and show it to MJ because he wants to be with MJ.
Well, then he jumped.
Brad sucks.
I immediately thought it was a prostitute.
Right. Like, that's where his mind went immediately.
Like, you're such a dork that you would, you know. And pretty quick.
This is a guy who was gone, or no, he was around for 5 years.
He was around for 5 years.
God, my brain, I'm sorry.
The things that he must have, to give Brad a break, and I don't want to because I hate him.
It must have been strange
to live through as a child, the snapping.
He's also dealing with trauma, yeah.
That's true.
He sucks anyways.
He sucks.
You know, like, people deal with trauma and they don't suck. Mm. But just want to give that a little insight into him.
Okay, so because Peter's whole thing with his trip is that he wants to woo MJ, he doesn't want Brad to show her this picture. So he fires up Edith, asks her to get rid of the photo from Brad's phone, and accidentally ends up ordering a hit on Brad with a drone that ends up firing a ton of, not bullets, but just like blasts at their school bus. There's this whole really cool fight scene where Peter has to kind of clandestinely, like, destroy the drone.
And even though it does go off, I will call this Chekhov's drone.
Okay.
This is Chekhov's drone.
That's good. All right.
I also like that all of his AI is constantly trying to murder people. Remember Karen's like, you know, should we...
instant kill.
Yeah, instant kill. He's like, stop with the instant kill. Now, he can't help it. He just triggers the worst elements of it.
Right. So Peter does stop the drone from, you know, killing Brad. Not that it would have been that big of a loss if Brad had died.
No, seriously. It would have just killed everyone else, I think, is the problem.
Now in Prague, Peter and Ned plan to get their classmates out of the way of the Fire Elemental. So to do that, they end up sending a bunch of teenagers to go see the opera instead of go to this really cool carnival that's outside.
Betty was pumped, though.
Betty was pumped.
Yeah.
No, she wasn't. She didn't want to go. Ned wanted to go.
Ned was hoping because he knew that
he needed to distract them.
Obviously, the teenagers aren't very, very happy about having to go to this opera that is like 4 hours long or something like that. Something ridiculous.
We haven't talked, by the way, about one of the best members of the young cast.
What's that?
Flash Thompson.
Flash Thompson.
The Flash Mob.
Who you kind of...
is it now? Who's now a streaming
star.
Influencer. Right.
Or I mean, he thinks he is.
We don't know how many people are following
That's
him.
That's true. We don't know the Flash Mob. And a giant Spider-Man stan.
I also love that, like, he's pretty dorky. And Tom Holland slash Peter Parker is, like, a pretty, like, good-looking, strong guy. But he's still just, like, going right at him.
Right.
He doesn't care. He's still calling him a penis Parker still.
I mean, even the... like, this is a school of nerds, but there is a king nerd.
Right.
And Flash Thompson is apparently that nerd.
Who couldn't get any questions right in the quiz bowl in the first movie.
And then also on top of all of that, we learned like in small little hints throughout this movie that he actually, his home life is horrible. And like, he's probably really rich, but his parents are never around. And
we're all dealing with trauma.
Yeah. There's a reason that he's a bully, you guys. It's because he doesn't have love in his life.
That's true. I like Penis Parker though. Really good.
Of course.
Simple but effective.
He does have followers.
He does have followers.
Let's be honest. Who needs love when you have followers?
That's the real love.
On social media.
That's absolutely.
It's true.
Yeah.
So during all of this, they're at the opera. Peter has a chance to sit next to MJ. And in his heart, he wants to stay there and be with her. But he has to go help Quentin Beck fight this fire elemental with Fury yelling in his ear the entire time to hurry up.
Mm-hmm.
So he bows out. And goes to help Quentin, now going by Mysterio. So they do defeat the fire elemental after, you know, some of his classmates go and, you know, sneak out.
Yeah,
they go
to like a rave or
they suck.
Something.
It's the Festival of Lights.
It's the Festival of Lights. It's very Hanukkah. Pretty. It's very pretty. They do defeat the fire elemental after Mysterio sacrifices himself to defeat the monster, and he miraculously lives despite having thrown himself into the center of this lava metal creature.
How did that happen?
That's so weird, right?
Yeah.
So upon winning, after all of this destruction comes through, Fury accuses Peter of not having his head in the game, of, you know, being too distracted, and he thanks Mysterio for all his help, calling him the true hero of the moment, etc., etc. And Peter is still overwhelmed by all this. He still just wants to be a teenager and go on this trip and tell the girl that he loves her. And he decides, while he's sitting around at a bar with Mysterio, still Peter tells Mysterio that he's not old enough to drink and ends up drinking like water or something at this bar because he's a good boy.
Lemonade,
because he's a good boy.
That's what I would do.
And so Peter, overwhelmed by all of this, decides that Mysterio should be the next Tony Stark because Quentin, he's brave and kind, and he shows all of these really good qualities. He's Peter's new mentor, kind of. So in Peter's mind, Quentin is starting to take over this spot that Tony Stark left. Mm-hmm. So he hands the AI Edith over to Quentin, even though Quentin protests and says, no, I'm not worthy. And then Peter gives him Edith and leaves.
I want to shout out the hair and makeup department here, because
yes,
when Jake Gyllenhaal puts on the glasses that are kind of the Tony Stark shades, mm-hmm, there is a resemblance,
yes,
to Robert Downey Jr.
Absolutely.
In that moment. I think just to the way his hair is and the way his beard is groomed, it's just like, you're just like, whoa.
Yeah,
and they only kind of hint at Peter getting it, but I think it's a really subtle, nice touch.
Right, and Peter kind of does a little small, little double take, it's really good. That's a good point. So then it all goes to hell. The bar around them fades away, very similarly to how we saw Tony Stark's barf technology in Captain America: Civil War. And we learn, as we all knew going in, if you know anything about comic books, you know that Quentin Beck, aka Mysterio, is a lying liar who lies, and is actually the villain of the story.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
And a bunch of comic book fans finally stop biting their tongue.
Everyone
people have been clamped down on their tongues ever since this trailer came out, because if you were a comic book fan and you saw it, you're like, oh yeah, no,
Mysterio is not a nice person.
You know, normally I would think that the barf thing was like a retcon sort of deal. They took this thing that happened in an old movie and decided to use it, but Marvel plans things so far in advance, I wonder if that was always part of the plan.
Oh, it definitely was.
I don't think so.
Well, Civil War, they didn't even have the Spider-Man rights when they made Civil War.
Yeah, I don't think that, but I think they're very smart.
Yeah,
and
I wonder when they decided, like, at what point.
It worked so well.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just, I love the ultimate throwback, which is the guy who is Obadiah Stane's assistant. Is part of Mysterio's crew.
Yep.
He must have loved getting that call.
Amazing.
So good. So it turns out, to summarize all of this, that Quentin Beck was actually the one who developed the barf technology that we first saw in Civil War. And he was angry that he never got the credit he deserved. And he was also really angry that Tony Stark called it barf.
Yeah.
Because, yes, I would also be angry about
that. I'd be fine with it.
Beck's also recruited another scientist who we first saw in the first Iron Man movie that
This is the true wrap up for Phase 3 right here.
Yes. Yeah. This is the, oh my
All
God.
All the way back to Iron Man.
I wish Sam Rockwell had shown up, though.
No, everybody's just kind of, Iron Man 2 is just kind of over there.
Well,
we don't speak of it that much.
I watched Moon last night, so that's why I want to watch more Sam Rockwell.
So,
on another note,
poor Sam Rockwell's always good.
So, Quentin Beck has, you know, gotten this man in on it, and as well as a bunch of other people who have been screwed over by Tony Stark throughout the years, because if there's one thing a supervillain loves, it is vengeance. Turns out that it is all fake. The elementals, the threat, the multiverse, everything. Beck's been using this AI technology and drones that are super crazy accurate projection tech that we saw in Barf presentation in Civil War to make up the elementals. Beck even wears a motion capture suit, just like the MCU actors do.
Yes.
I think, Jordan, you said when we were after the theater, you were like, this is a Marvel movie about making Marvel movies.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that same thing.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Because they're like, people need to believe in things, and it's about, you know, trying to, you know, not trick people, but give something, a hero people can believe in. He's a motion capture, you know, he needs to do the right thing. It very, very much felt like that.
And it's very interesting because the original Mysterio in the comics was Hollywood guy. He was a stuntman and a special effects guru.
Yep.
And now he's a disgruntled tech disruptor.
Right.
You know, and it's just Jake Gyllenhaal, man. He just nails that vibe so hard.
When he's standing on top of the bar and giving his monologue about, you know, about how he did all of this and all of these plans that they have, it is pure, the moment of, oh God, this is great.
It's his TED Talk.
It's his TED Talk. So good.
You're like, welcome to Mysterio's TED Talk.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would watch Mysterio's TED Talk over and over again.
If the character played in Nightcrawler wound up in tech and not the media, you could see him doing this.
Yeah.
That's good. Peter does not yet know that all of this is happening after he has left. He goes back to the hotel and, has a time. MJ and him kind of decide to go on a walk together. They have a sweet little romantic night. And MJ tells Peter that she knows he's Spider-Man.
She's like 65% sure.
Yeah, she's like, and he goes, no, I'm not. No. And he tries to play it off. Besides,
everyone knows he's Night Monkey.
That's great.
We haven't even touched on Night Monkey.
Monkey.
The Italian media is great.
Yeah.
You know?
Very good.
That's where the name Mysterio came from in the first place.
Yes.
And it's just one of the things I think that they really, you know, have done well in the two Spider-Man films is not only do they have these moments of humor, but then they know when to turn it into a running gag.
Absolutely.
I love the later, like the German woman who sees him at the airport. She's
Night
like,
Monkey!
Night Monkey! Night
yeah.
Monkey!
Yeah, Night yeah. Monkey! While they're talking and Peter's trying to say, oh no, that wasn't me, they find MJ pulls out this hunk of metal that she had found during the battle originally with the fire elemental, and it has some of Peter Parker's Spider-Man's webbing on it. And she's like, well, you know, does Night Monkey use the same webbing as Spider-Man? Like, what's happening here? You're lying to me. And while they're arguing over this, giant creature appears over them. What appears to be another elemental just all of a sudden appears around them, and they both duck down and kind of scream a little bit, and then it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize that the hunk of metal that MJ has is a projector.
Yes.
And that it was the thing that kind of created all of this. And they're like, what's happening? Blah, blah, blah. And Peter in that moment realizes what is happening, that all of this is fake, or that something fishy is going on.
You know, here's a question I'm thinking about when we talk about how this is the first MCU movie about making MCU movies.
Mm.
Jake Gyllenhaal or Mysterio or Quentin or whatever you want to call him, he's bitter that his stuff was taken, right? He's bitter that it was not put to the use he wanted it to be put to.
Right, and that he wasn't given credit for it.
But what's his ultimate goal now? To be known and be given credit for these things?
I think that's it. I think he wants to be known.
He wants to be famous?
He wants to be a hero.
Yeah.
There's no like world domination necessarily.
I never got that vibe. I think he just wants to be known.
Right.
He wants people to know his name.
A lot easier ways to do that.
Yep. But insanity never really helped anyone.
True.
He wants to be bigger than Iron Man. He wants to be the next Iron Man. It's his revenge on Tony Stark. He's basically trying to overtake Tony Stark's legacy.
Yeah, he wants, he's like, if so London goes, it's fine.
It's There's a personal.
Vacuum. There's a vacuum that's been created.
Well, and it's his personal vendetta, you know,
right,
against Tony Stark.
There's just no larger designs like, I want to snap half the universe too.
Right.
Right. After discovering all of this, you know, they go back to the hotel, kind of freaking out a little bit. They talk to Ned for a while, and then Peter goes to Berlin.
Ned's in a robe. You wonder what's happened with
We don't need to talk about that.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about that.
Why not?
Because we're talking about how Peter is going to Berlin to meet up with Fury.
I'm just saying, Ned was in a robe.
He just wants to be comfortable, okay?
Okay.
All right?
That's
All
fine.
Right? That's what we're leaving it at.
I was wondering.
Peter goes to Berlin to meet with Fury. To tell him all of these things that he's discovered, that he thinks that maybe Quentin Beck might be bad. He's a little bit panicky, and he meets up with what he thinks are Fury and Maria in this kind of very official-looking headquarters. And from here on out, for how long would you guys say this sequence is?
It feels like a long time, but I don't know.
I don't think it's really all that long, but we get what is one of the coolest sequences.
The full Mysterio. Yeah. This is the full Mysterio. And
This is the most comic booky thing that MCU has ever done.
Yeah, and I will pat myself a little bit on the back for this, because from the moment he got into the car with Nick Fury, mm-hmm. I was like, this is a Mysterio trick. Once Mysterio starts doing his thing,
yep.
In the comics, but you just can't trust anything.
It's true. Nothing
is real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
let's walk through what happened in all these things. Like,
Yeah. Yeah. So we see basically Mysterio throws a ton of illusions. Thank mm-hmm. you. That's what I'm
illusions,
looking for.
Illusions, Michael.
That's right.
A ton of illusions at Spider-Man. He doesn't know what's real. All of these horrible things happen to him. He's mocking him for everything bad that's happened to him over the years,
yeah.
All of his trauma, all of his insecurities, because he has gotten to know, because Mysterio has gotten to know Peter, because Peter started to see him as a bit of a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mysterio starts throwing all of these illusions at him. And tricks him over and over and over again to the point where Peter doesn't know what's real.
And I think it's cool because you look at Mysterio as a character, doesn't have superpowers, right? He doesn't have anything that could really, in a one-on-one fight. So you're like, how is this guy going to take on Spider-Man super strong? He's got all this stuff. And that it just really illustrates what Mysterio can be as
a
villain.
It's all mental.
Yeah, or even things like, you know, Spider-Man's running in a certain direction or punches something and it's actually the wall or he falls. It's just and my favorite thing was the Marvel Zombies shout out.
Yeah, that was
there's
good.
There's one of the illusions is Tony Stark's grave, you know, making Peter feel guilty.
And then a
full
gauntlet.
Zombie Iron Man comes out, which as we know is a thing from the comics.
So,
Easter egg.
That was a deep cut Easter egg.
I need to see. I've only seen it once, and I want to see the movie again so I can go in and
that
just
whole
note
sequence.
Every single thing over and over again. All of this happens at one point. Peter thinks that he's talking to Fury, but he's actually not.
I love that part too. And I thought I will say, I was
you
on
called
that.
It.
I was on it as soon as he's asking like, "Who else did you tell?" I'm like, "No, Peter, you're in danger, girl. Get
don't,
out.
Don't do it." Through all of this, Mysterio is pushing Peter back and back with all of the illusions, and then out of nowhere, all of a sudden Peter's standing on train tracks, a train flies through, and we think that it hits him, and Mysterio assumes that Peter is dead.
And that's the end of the film.
And that's how it
really
ends.
Dark. Yeah. You thought Infinity War was dark.
Spider-Man is dead.
Yeah.
Again. So, no. Turns out that Peter is not dead. Thank God. Being Spider-Man is able to save himself. He kind of crawls into the train and just collapses. He's all beat up and bloodied and a little bit, more than a little bit traumatized.
Sure.
Passes out and then wakes up in a jail cell in the Netherlands.
They're so happy there.
Then surrounded by what I assume it's a drunk tank that they've put him in.
Hooligans.
Yeah,
a bunch of soccer fans.
And so he just kind of wakes up and these very kind men have draped a jersey over him because they thought he was cold.
You should stay in
this movie. Really, this movie should do a lot for tourism to the Netherlands.
Yes.
It made me want to go there.
Absolutely. So Peter kind of wakes up. He's a little bit healed, thank God for, you know, Spider-Man healing factor. And he gets up and kind of limps out breaks the lock on the door to the jail cell and just walks out.
And the guys, the Netherlands guys, just close it again.
Can
we get another Night Monkey reference? Because the guard is talking on the phone to someone and references Night Monkey.
It references Night Monkey.
Wearing that mask.
So Peter makes his way out into this tiny little town in the Netherlands. I can't even remember what the name of it is. I'm not going to attempt to say it.
Dutchville.
Sure. He borrows a gentleman's phone and ends up calling Happy, who arrives, I'm sure, a very short amount of time later in one of the Stark jets to save him.
That guy was so nice. Just let this random kid, beat up kid, use his phone.
He was so nice. Everyone needs to go to the Netherlands. It makes me want to go to the Netherlands.
They're all high is the thing.
That's true. Happy comes to save Peter. They have a very emotional discussion in which they talk about Tony's legacy, about what's expected of Peter. Peter decides, all right, I have to do something about this. I have to be the one to step up. And he goes into the back of this plane, and conveniently there is a very intelligent machine back there that he can custom make his own Spider-Man suit. And he just automatically knows how to use all of it. And Happy kind of looks over his shoulder.
Happy tells him the magic was inside you all along. This is the magic was inside you all along moment.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
One of the best lines of the whole movie. I love Led Zeppelin.
I love Led Zeppelin.
That felt a little forced to me, to be honest.
I mean, it's just all of the moments in which Peter Parker messes up cultural things have you ever heard of this really old movie?
They're old people cultural things. I mean, it's just continually digging at the middle age.
It's a teenager written by middle-aged people.
But what I love is that Happy doesn't say anything. It just like lingers there.
He smiles.
So no one says anything about it.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite part.
It cuts away.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point, I don't know. It's just, those jokes felt very natural to me in Infinity War. And here it was just kind of like, okay, you had to get one in there.
They've always kind of struck me as odd because I do not know any 15, 16-year-old would be like, oh, you know that really old movie, Star Wars?
Yeah.
Or The Empire Strikes Back or whatever? Right. No teenager would ever say
that. Well, you also grew up a huge dork. Maybe all your friends knew about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
we're not going to get into that. So Peter and Happy fly to London, where they know that Quentin is starting his great big plan. And he kind of explains it to everyone. He and his team of vengeful little minions are going to create the biggest elemental the world has ever seen, using all of this Edith technology that Quentin now has control over. And they are going to essentially destroy a very large amount of London, kill a lot of people, but Quentin will come in at the last second, and Mysterio will save the day and be heralded as a hero.
Well, what's interesting is that some of the damage is imagined and some of it's not, right? Like some of it is projected.
Right.
So I'm wondering how much is he planning on actually destroying versus how much he's going to pretend has been destroyed.
I mean, he does have all of these drones now as they go along.
And he has that conversation with his minion where he says, you know, well, there's going to be casualties. We're going to kill a lot of people. That's good for an Avengers level event. That's what he keeps calling it.
Yep. And then all of the minions kind of have this moment of like, oh no, he's crazy. We're working for a crazy person.
But then they go along with it anyway, which is a perfect metaphor for the tech sector.
Oh,
zing, Silicon Valley.
Got him.
Or a lot of people in federal government now.
There you go.
Also got him.
Yeah.
Peter shows up. He's got his fancy new suit in gear and he fights.
Fight.
There's a very long extended fight scene. Happy goes to go and Peter this entire time has been really concerned about all of his friends, his family, keeping them safe. And so he sends Happy to go fetch his classmates, mainly MJ and Ned. But, you know, if Flash wants to tag along, that's fine. And Brad, whatever. So
Flash is actually very useful.
Flash actually ends up being very useful.
Right.
They actually find him because Flash has been
live streaming the whole thing, which again, the most realistic part of the film.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they find them that way. Happy brings the jet. It gets blown up. They have to run to the Tower of London and they just like run past all of the guards into the Tower of London and go to the room with all the crown jewels. Cause there's a vault in there that Happy just knows. He's like, there's a vault. We need to go in there.
Yeah.
They
he
go
reads
in.
His tourism books before he goes.
Right. There's a couple of drones following them, trying to kill them. This entire time, Peter is on the tower bridge trying to get to Beck, basically, who's standing, you know, at the very, very top of it. But there's all of these drones flying everywhere. He has to Spider-Man his way up through all of it. It's very heroic. It's very fun. very clever.
And I think one of the things, you know, I'm on record as saying I'm not a fan of watching superheroes fight hordes of CGI minions, which is basically what this is. I think that the way that Spider-Man fights and takes on these drones is so creatively executed that I found it pretty entertaining. I mean, because, you know, most of the time when it's Captain America and Thor, is just they're punching, and then they're also punching, and then they're punching some more.
Right.
And here he's, you know, he's swinging all over the place. He's tying them together. He's using his webs in very creative ways. And I thought that made it a lot of fun.
Yes.
Got to use his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spider-Man is...
He's an artiste.
Yes. He's one of the most entertaining superheroes to watch.
Right.
Because he has all of these acrobatics involved with all of his stuff.
Yeah. Very accurate with his web spinning, too.
Yes.
You know, I would just be spraying all over the place.
But he's got, I mean, he's got Peter Tingle. That's
why. Yeah, that's true. I really love
Tingle.
That line.
We haven't addressed Peter Tingle.
That's I was waiting for that.
Completely left out Peter Tingle, which is important because it's going to come to fruition here.
It's very good. So the entire time, rather than calling it a Spidey sense, Aunt May has been calling it his Peter Tingle.
Yeah.
Which is like something you would... like make fun of a kid as they were going through puberty. Like that's right.
Term you would use. Absolutely.
But it sticks.
It does.
And so, Happy calls it that.
Yep.
And so, when they were talking about their plan before going to London.
Is there a huge precedent for Peter not getting his quote unquote tingle right away? Or are they just doing this for the...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time he loses it when...
A time, sure.
When it's convenient for the plot.
Right.
But
when he's gone through trauma or he's scared or blah, blah, blah.
But in MCU, he's only had it like a limited amount of time. Like, you know, in Infinity War with his arm.
Right. He's still learning it.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's coming in slowly. He's learning. We bounce back to Happy and all of the kids. They defeat a couple of the drones. Zendaya / MJ takes up a... What is that? Called?
I would call that a morning star.
A morning star. Thank you. Yeah. And she lifts that up and knocks the hell out of one of the drones.
That was pretty cool.
That was good.
I'd like to thank Dungeons and Dragons for
knowing
educating
that.
Me as to what a morning star is.
Excellent.
Yeah. Actually, I apologize. That is not a morning star. That would probably be a mace.
Okay.
A morning star has the chain and the handle.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone, I'm so sorry.
You've had a long night.
Listening out there, I really, really want to apologize.
I recommend just turning off the podcast right now.
I know. I've ruined it for everyone.
So Zendaya saves the day. And as she always does, Peter gets to the top of Tower Bridge and the place where Beck is. And they have a confrontation. And kind of there's more illusions that are thrown at him and blah, blah, blah. And Peter finally harnesses his Peter Tingle and is able to see through the illusion by sensing what's coming at him. He's able to defeat all of the drones along the way. He gets to what he thinks is Quentin Beck, confronts him, and then has a last-minute realization and kind of reaches out his hand and stops Quentin.
I think it's his Peter Tingle again.
It's his Peter Tingle, yep. And stops him from shooting him in the head, basically.
Right. Him using his Peter Tingle to see what's happening is very much like his Use the Force Luke moment. He's finally harnessing that.
Very much. So they do all of that, and through some accidents, Quentin ends up getting shot and kind of falls to the ground, and they kind of have a moment, and Peter wins.
But this is my favorite line, one of my favorite lines in the film. People will believe anything.
That's true.
One of the things I think this movie, you know, it's a fun Spider-Man adventure, but there is something to be gleaned in there about media and storytelling and narratives, emergent narratives that happen in various forms.
There's something darker there.
Yeah, and I, you know, it pays off in a minute, which we're going to talk about. But but yeah, that's a very poignant line for the world we live in right now.
Yep, absolutely, and really fits in with how the MCU has been this behemoth for the past 10 years.
Yeah. If it's an MCU movie, anyone will believe it. Or they have so many fan theories people believe, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's just, Mysterio in this movie as a whole is just such a commentary on the superhero, I don't want to say superhero myth because there's a lot that's behind that, but more like the sensation around superheroes.
Absolutely.
And how we all want that and we all want to escape with these characters and everything. Anyway, which is a lot of subtext. They don't really get into it, but it's there if you want to find it.
Yeah. And it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit scary.
Yes.
But so they win. They return to New York City. Peter and MJ get together. They have a nice little kiss, a sweet little kiss. When she comes to save him with her mace in hand again, she brings it just in case he needs some help. And they kiss and get together and say that they like each other, and then they
Which was adorable.
It was so cute.
It was friggin' adorable.
It was so cute.
There was a lot of audible awing.
Yeah,
because I think the thing is Zendaya in this movie is Zendaya. I don't know.
I say Zendaya.
Let's call the whole thing off. is so good
because she's really good in this.
She has that she's so good at navigating that vulnerability that's under the cool, you know, or the detachment that she puts out there, and making them both feel very organic and of a whole. It's not like a switch flips. You kind of see the voyage between them every time her facial expressions changes. Like, it's a really subtle and really good performance.
You see the way she puts up that, you know, that shield.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Screw anyone who thinks she can't act. Go watch Euphoria on HBO.
There you go.
So they head back to New York City, have a good time, and
movie's over. Nothing happens. End.
Nothing else happens, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Everything's good for Peter.
Yeah.
Except,
dun, dun, dun.
First of all, we get the Go-Go's Vacation, which is a great end credits
fantastic
song.
Yep.
So chef's kiss to that one.
Mwah. So first of two credit scenes, the mid-credit scene, Peter goes to pick up MJ in Spider-Man's suit. He's a little bit late to meet her, but they have a date, and he takes her swinging.
This is what you're talking about is before the credits.
Oh, yeah.
Mid-credits is the end of their date.
Yes.
When he puts her down.
All right. Good call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good call. All right. I forgot that.
There's like 14 different
credits. See, you've seen
here.
It more recently
That's
than I
right.
have.
Even though I'm barely awake, I can remember these things.
So the mid-credit scene, finish or whatever, and
over
she's
by
like,
the garden.
She's like, never, I'm never doing that again. We are never doing that again. You know, she's
I like that
it.
She's afraid of it. She's not like, this is awesome.
Yeah, that's exact. I would be, if someone was swinging me around, I would have been screaming the entire time, and I would have the exact same reaction of, I will never do that again.
But she's supposed to be cool.
She's a dork.
Well, yeah, but she's supposed to act cool.
She's supposed to act cool. Right. I like that there's this moment where she's like, I can't even pretend right now. I'm just terrified.
Yeah.
So they stop, and he's like, all right, well, I'm going to go swing away. And he jumps up onto like a light post or something. And then on the garden and a bunch of screens around, up pops a news thing, a newscast.
A TMZ type thing from the Daily Beast.
It's Pat Kiernan.
Yeah.
For those of us from New York. Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
my
it's
God.
It's such a great cameo.
Yep.
So he pops in and
the
he's like...
The best cameo in this scene.
Yes.
Pat Kiernan from New York 1.
Bold statement.
That is not true. Okay, go ahead.
So he's like, oh, the dailybugle.com or something like that. A news
they
site
pivoted the video.
A little bit salacious, you know, kind of nasty.
It's InfoWars.
It is InfoWars.
It's an InfoWars or Breitbart take.
And
it
up
absolutely
pops
is.
J. Jonah Jameson.
As played by...
J.K. Simmons.
Simmons.
Oh my God, what a great
Did your
moment.
Crowd go wild?
Absolutely.
Our crowd went, everyone just screamed.
Sorry to anyone who has not seen the film who's sitting in this room. Oh my God, it's horrible.
I feel like we spoiled so much for her, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I'm
no,
so
but
sorry.
This moment is so great because, you know, you wonder when J. Jonah Jameson is going
to
show up in this universe.
To.
And then the thought is like, who's going to do a better job
no
of it
one.
Than J.K. Simmons,
nope.
right?
Iconic.
He won an Oscar for playing a version of him.
More or less, yeah. So.
J.K. Simmons is the best part of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. That's my take.
You're just too much of a child
all
to remember
right.
those.
Alfred
all
Molina
right.
in Spider-Man 2
okay.
was phenomenal.
Right.
James
anyway.
Franco beginning his run of
oh,
ironic
please.
Roles without us realizing
oh,
it is great.
God.
You look back and watch those movies, you're
no.
like, oh my God, he's doing
Screw
the gig.
You.
Macy Gray's performance in Spider-Man.
Anyway.
In the World Unity Festival. Anyway, let's go ahead.
James Franco.
Anyway, J.K. Simmons is J. Jonah Jameson. Say that five times fast. Shows up and blames Spider-Man for the Elemental's attack.
Which is a very J. Jonah Jameson thing to do.
Absolutely. He's a terror on this world and blah, blah, blah. And he says, we have proof of, you know, a greater of his evil and his greater plot. And up pops this kind of very... like selfie cam of Quentin Beck not too long before he dies saying, accusing Spider-Man of being the person who has put all of this together. It's his plot. And then he says, and just so you know, kind of this last moment, you think that Spider-Man has been the person who killed Quentin Beck on purpose. And that he's also the one who created all of this. And then he says, and Spider-Man is, and then it cuts out for a second, and you think that he's safe. and then it comes back on and you hear Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
The most exciting thing to happen at Madison Square Garden in years.
Yeah. After and Peter a rough goes, week for the Knicks,
what?
You know.
Good week for the Rangers, though. But
and
yeah.
then it cuts to black.
Yeah.
And
the it splashes his image on it, too. Yeah. So it's like not
and
no
this,
impression
like,
of who
Peter Parker is.
Is,
you know, this 16-year-old kid from Queens. We know who he is. And the world knows who Spider-Man is now.
Is it ethical? Not the Daily Bugle is ethical, but to
out a teenager?
Out a teenager.
No.
Okay.
Probably not. I don't know. Yeah. The law, maybe the media law on secret superhero identities is a little bit lacking in our own
probably.
World.
Well, ethical versus legal.
Because what are you out? You're not out. You're outing him as a menace. If he's truly a villain, and as J.
Right.
Jonah Jameson believes he is,
thinks
let's put ourselves
is.
In J. Jonah Jameson's shoes.
Oh, gosh.
Sure. Spider-Man is a menace.
Right.
He's a web menace.
He wants to take over the world.
Check your sources, though, first.
So
go for comment, J. Jonah.
Now, come on. So, of course you're going to out him, because he's a hazard.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is all
comment.
Very true. So, that is the first of two post-credit scenes. The second one is we see Nick and Maria driving along in a car, and then it's revealed that they were actually Skrulls the entire time.
Not just any Skrulls.
Talos and Sorin.
That's right.
From
Ben
Captain
Mendelsohn.
Marvel.
I love that he showed up. Yeah, Ben Mendelsohn's the best.
He's incredible. So they've been masquerading as Fury and Hill basically this entire time, and Talos and Sorin's like, all right, you have to call him. Like, come on. And Talos is like, ugh. So he calls Fury, who turns out to be on a giant Skrull spaceship and is like the leader of the spaceship. So it kind of seems like they've switched roles.
Well, it seems like he's on vacation first. That's
it seems like he's on vacation.
Like sunbathing.
It's very much, if you've ever watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the beach, quote unquote, that he was on seemed very similar to what they had Coulson on when he was, you know, on vacation and actually he was getting like his entire brain like recreated. But that seemed like a big callback to me to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but then it turns out that he's on this Skrull spaceship.
My very first thought, and I don't think this is true, was does that mean that Nick Fury went to space with the Skrulls and Captain Marvel and has been a Skrull since the 90s?
We're
well,
not...
then with the Skrulls snapped.
I don't...
But yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Everything in the universe was snapped.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I doubt that. I don't think that's what they were saying.
Right.
But I think that could have been a really fun wrinkle. It's like the entire time we've known Nick Fury on Earth, it's been a Skrull. But
right.
I think that's not true.
Well, there's...
I think he'd want to get involved.
In my head canon, it is.
I mean,
I think he'd want to get involved in everything that's happening with the Avengers.
Well, no, he is. I think he's been direct. I would say in that theory, he would have been directing everything the whole time, but from afar.
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to see this as them setting up a secret invasion kind of storyline.
Because anyone can be a Skrull.
Because anyone can be a Skrull. And like everyone who was like, everyone's a Skrull is so vindicated right now. And I don't want to give them that out of my own bitterness. But so that's kind of where we're going from here on out. So everyone knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Somehow the humans have kind of continued this relation, this longstanding relationship with the Skrull. And that's
the end.
That's Spider-Man Far From Home.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Anyone want to talk about favorite moments, maybe?
There's a lot of fun moments in this movie.
There's a lot of really good ones.
Yeah.
I really love when Flash is going on and on about how much he loves Spider-Man. And MJ's like, what's up with you and Spider-Man? He's like, he looks out for the neighborhood. He's a dope suit. And I really respect him. And Peter walks in and goes, sup, dickwad.
Yeah.
Like, so good.
The timing's
so dumb.
Really good.
I love Flash.
Yeah.
And
Tony Revolori is great.
I just think, to me, it's Jake Gyllenhaal's show.
Oh, he's great.
I mean,
so good.
Everybody's good. Tom Holland continues to be good as Spider-Man, but Jake Gyllenhaal is, I mean, A, he's a movie star.
Yes.
B, he's a tremendous actor. And C, he just nails the type of character he's being asked to play so, so very, very well.
He
plays crazy so well.
But not just crazy.
Like,
it's like a particular
unhinged.
Because in this movie, it's like Mysterio is like demented Steve Jobs, right?
Right.
He's a tech guru who, you know, he's wearing a turtleneck and in the scene, the flashback scene where they show Tony Stark humiliating him by calling his system Barf. That vibe is so there throughout this entire thing. It's really, really good.
He is the best part of this movie.
Yeah.
I also, we didn't talk much about Ned and Betty, but their breakup is great.
Their breakup.
It's when a conscious uncoupling.
Yeah.
It more or less.
And now they're just friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. I love that surprise. And Peter's like, you guys want to go on a double date? He's like, we split.
And then I think the other favorite moment for me was the scene in Peter's hotel room with Nick Fury. And the way they played with tone, bouncing back between Nick Fury trying to tell him something important and then all these wacky little things that kept interrupting it.
Yes.
You know, the music would come on for a second and then stop instantly and everything. It was just really well done.
Yeah, and we got Ned there, just lying there. Yeah.
Just lying there after having been shot with a tranquilizer dart.
How many times is he getting shot with tranquilizers?
Probably a lot. Yeah. Poor Ned.
I love also the jealousy that he has that MJ now knows
right.
that he's that Peter Spider-Man. Like you're FOS.
Interestingly enough, it's like even if he hadn't been outed at the end of this film, a lot of people know. The people in the Netherlands
know,
who all saw him in the Night Monkey costume and every member of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like in Game of Thrones, right? When Tyrion and Varys are talking about who knows Jon Snow is a Targaryen. Sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen the end of Game of Thrones.
Certainly everyone knows.
he says, how many people know? And he says, oh, like 9. He's like, well, now it's not a secret anymore. It's
right.
a fact.
Yeah.
Right.
And
which
I think
is great.
This is the same thing. This is the same thing. By the end of this movie, even if Peter hadn't been outed, so many people know he's Spider-Man. It would have spread somehow anyway. So yeah.
Remember in Spider-Man 2 when everyone on the train sees him with his
mask off?
We won't tell.
Yeah. It's like that.
Oh. But I think that having him outed by the end of the film is a really good way of addressing that, because I think a lot of people would have been saying that at the end of this movie. Like, everybody knows Peter Spider-Man are now, you know.
Yeah,
now,
if you're a teenager,
now they're like, yeah, everyone does.
Well, I was also going to say any moment where you see Zendaya and Tom Holland interacting on camera, they have fantastic chemistry.
Yeah.
And so,
do you ship them?
Yes, actually. Don't give me that look. Anytime that they're on camera together, you very much. You understand the teenage just infatuation that they have with each other, and you can feel that, and it's just very good.
I like that she's so much cooler than him.
Yes.
Yeah. Even if she's vulnerable, it's like she's much cooler than
and
him.
And his declaration, it's very teen. It's I like you a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not I love you. It's not they're acknowledging that it's the thing that this series has done so well so far is just acknowledge how young these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, the 26-year-old high school students that you see in most teen movies.
These are kids.
Awkward. They're awkward. They use terms like instead of love. They're not talking about like if we're gonna be married now, you know.
Yeah. I have a crush on you.
Yeah, they're holding hands. It's such this big moment.
It's so
it's so sweet.
Caitlin's crying almost.
I'm very emotional. Just because you aren't emotional about this stuff, Jordan, doesn't mean that you get to make fun of us for
that's right.
For liking.
For having human feelings.
Yeah,
I'm
for
all
liking
about having
happiness.
Followers, not love, like
okay.
Adam said.
That's right. Yeah. It's true.
So in this instance, you are the Flash of Sci-Fi Wire.
I am Flash Thompson.
And then I think you gotta give it up for the J. Jonah Jameson appearance. I mean, that was
perfect.
It was absolutely perfect. And
I'm glad they didn't give him a wig. They just let him go baldish.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hasn't J. Jonah, he was in the Spider-Man game. He was more of a podcaster slash the one that just came out on the PS4.
Oh, yeah. He was more of, he was a radio kind of personality.
Yeah. So I think it's like updating that character for the modern era, making him like an Alex Jones type of vlogger or whatever is a really smart move.
Yeah, I feel like the Daily Bugle is now kind of like TMZ or, Daily Caller or something.
Yeah.
All right.
I say InfoWars. I think
he's
the Alex Jones of the except
the
obsessed
MCU.
With Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, this kind of wraps up the current Spider-Man mythos that we have all throughout.
Although they should put out a Christmas special and call it Spider-Man Home for the Holidays. Because it keeps the whole home thing, right? Homecoming, far from home, home
what
for
do
holidays.
We? What do we think the next Spider-Man movie standalone will be called?
Spider-Man Homeless. And because now he's Peter Parker, he can't get a job or anything. People know him.
It's got. Does it have to have the home thing in it?
I think it has to have because it's homecoming, far from home. There has to be. I've struggled with this.
Spider-Man Sherlock Holmes.
It's going to introduce the Human Torch, and it's going to be Spider-Man Home Cooking.
Hey,
all right,
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
On that note,
call us Kevin Feige. We got all the good ideas.
Went to my high school.
Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That with me.
So email him.
I will.
we have to give our own ranking for where Spider-Man Far From Home falls, because this movie is literally coming out today as we're recording this.
On all, in terms of all the Spider-Man's movies?
I think so.
The Spider's Man.
I haven't had time to actually think about this.
I actually have it. I have my ranking ready.
Oh, please do tell.
Yeah.
I think that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse still reigns as number one. Especially, it's interesting that this movie has come out almost, I think just a little less than a week after Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse arrived on Netflix.
Sure.
So I had the chance to rewatch that. Amazing film, still number one.
Incredible.
So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
I love that movie.
Tobey Maguire is still my favorite Peter Parker.
He's great. It's got the best villain, I think. Uh-huh. Dr. Alfred Molina's Dr. Octopus is amazing.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes, exactly. Then Homecoming. Mm. Then this.
Okay. That's fair.
Solid.
I would put this at number four.
That's solid.
I think that Homecoming, as much as I love Jake Gyllenhaal, I think that Michael Keaton was more interesting and compelling, and Michael Keaton is awesome. And
his Vulture was
and
incredible.
I was a little more interested in the shenanigans, the non-superhero shenanigans in Homecoming, I think.
Mm.
And in Peter's journey. Peter, to me, was more interesting in Homecoming than he was in Far From Home, which is not to say he was not interesting in this film, just if I had to compare them.
Those are all good points.
It's a smaller movie, Homecoming.
Yeah.
It's always more intimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do love Michael Keaton because, like, in this movie, I love Jake Gyllenhaal in it, but Mysterio is kind of a dick. Or Michael Keaton's character, he's, you know, got some decent.
He's like kind of right.
Grind. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that scene.
In the car?
Where he goes to pick her up and then in the car and everything is just. That's another chef's kiss moment.
The sound editing on that, too, where you just cut away from the song and that moment of like heart dropping. Yeah. Just, oh, no.
Everything there is so, so good. And as much as I like Jake Gyllenhaal in this movie, there's no scene like that between him and Tom Holland. But I mean, you know, I will say I'm really psyched that they went full on with the illusions and the Mysterio hallucinatory thing. I thought that was really great.
I thought it was the coolest. I mean, Doctor Strange had a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Visually, I didn't love the movie, but Doctor Strange. But I think those sequences are probably my favorite in the MCU.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. And I would put it in number four, but it's a very tight call between Homecoming and Far From Home.
To me, they're a little interchangeable. I think I probably like Homecoming a little bit more. But it's pretty close, three or four.
I feel like I need to see Far From Home again.
That's fair too. Yeah,
yeah.
We had a little more time to live with Homecoming.
Right,
a little
absolutely.
Bit of fat on that one. It could have been a little bit shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, most movies could be a little shorter.
So everybody kind of is on the number four train.
Right now,
if you had to say right now,
okay, we're gonna get into this because I have like
she's crying again. It's the third time you've cried
in
this podcast.
Would you stop? I am very unpopular. My most unpopular opinion is that I don't like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies.
Right.
I do agree that Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2 is an incredible villain. And I love J. Jonah Jameson in those movies. But I don't put Spider-Man 2 near the top of it.
Okay.
Because that's my take, and a lot of people don't like me for it. No, but that's my opinion. Jordan's not happy with
you. You know what it really is? It's just like what you grew up watching too.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, I grew up watching the Spider-Man movies, but I was very young.
So I think that's the thing is that you didn't have the context of years of no Spider-Man.
This is very true. I grew up reading Spider-Man comics.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, the movies.
But like, yeah, the movies themselves, I was very young when the first movie came out. And so it was very,
So where would you put this at number three?
I would put this at number three, yeah.
Okay.
But I do want to watch Far From Home again because I've seen Homecoming I don't know how many times.
You should rewatch Spider-Man 2.
I did. When? I did the Spider-Man 2 podcast for this. If you go back, I'm on it.
I'm never going to listen to it if you're disparaging it.
Oh my God. Me and Juan had a very nice discussion.
Guys.
All right, fine.
Peace in our time. Remember Ned and Betty and how they split so amicably.
So they were so
this
mature
can be done.
About it.
Yeah.
So on that note, thank
go
you.
Go watch it again.
Yeah, go watch Spider-Man Far From Home. It's fantastic. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us for the Spider-Man podcast.
That's right. This
the
is
eight
the
days
end.
Of Spider-Man. This is the end. Guys,
yeah.
We
legs,
did it.
Eight podcasts.
We did
we
it.
Did there.
Yep. Yeah.
We did it. So make sure to rate, review, and subscribe and, you know, join us next time when we talk about other movies, other things.
Other Marvel movies.
Other Marvel movies. I don't know.
We could talk about anything. Maybe the Snyder Cut will come out. We'll talk about that.
Oh my god.
And on that note.
The end. Bye.